There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Ladies and gentlemen, if I may direct your attention to the large crate center stage. Inside that crate is our host, Max Levine. And in a moment, he will be attempting the most life-threatening, awe-inspiring act of theatrical bravery ever attempted over the airwaves, where you actually can't see him. Max, give us a knock on the wall to prove that you're okay and that you're totally in the box. Good! Max is still safe and alive! Now I will dance around the crate with this canister of gasoline, dousing it from top to bottom. Don't worry, this is totally safe!
Gasoline?
And now Bumpy the Wonder Pony will scatter kindling around the bottom.
Bumpy, add some sparklers and Roman candles, won't you?
What?
There we go! Max, knock once more, would you? There! He's totally alive and fine and totally in the box! And now I will light this match and set the box aflame! Max will have only 10 seconds in which to make his escape, and the only way he can do that is... magic! So let the roasting begin! Count with me. 10, 9, whatever. And... oh no! Will we have to rename the show? Have we lost our host of hosts? Or is this still Max Mike Movies? Wait! There! Climbing out of that standard-sized envelope, could it be? Why, it is our host, totally unharmed, Max...
you call this magic?
Levine! Say the magic word, Max!
I lost my eyebrows.
We'll get them back! And I am his dainty assistant, Mike...
pull my wand.
Loose!
This week's movie, as part of our series, This Is a Good Place for a Stick-Up, is 2013's magical heist film, Now You See Me. Before we get to that, let me direct your attention to our...
poll question!
Last week's query was, who is your favorite cinematic villain? You answered us thusly. Bill O'Lading, Max.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
Thank you. Was first stuffing our mailbag with this little missive, quote, I like my villains perfectly sane and ruthless. I'll give you two. Hello, Clarice. Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs, 1992. Is there a more sinister, more terrorizing character in cinema? His cruel mix with affection and admiration, his lack of conscience, his psychiatrist training to burrow down into your brain figuratively and literally.
Ew.
Gotta love it. Now you deal with me, O Prince, and all the powers of hell! Maleficent from Disney's Sleeping Beauty, 1959. The titular...
you said lur.
I did. Character is a personality-lacking cipher. It's the villain who burns into our brain. Mm. Eleanor Audley's voice absolutely makes the character, and it doesn't hurt when she turns into a giant ravenous dragon. Honorable mention, Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz, 1939. Much obliged, end quote. Oh, thank you so much, Bill. These were great. Oh,
those are terrific.
I would have been disappointed if Hannibal Lecter hadn't shown up, quite honestly.
Seriously.
Yeah. Aaron Perez was up next with, quote, Daniel Plainview. You see his journey to pure evil and what drove him. One of my favorite cinematic characters ever, end quote. Something, something, milkshake, something. Thanks, Packy.
Have I mentioned I abandoned my boy?
I abandoned my boy? I abandoned my child?
Yeah, yeah. Better have another milkshake.
From Harry Potter.
That too.
Oh, yeah. Da-Dave, 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 da-Dave. Wrote, quote, the witch in Snow White because she makes little children cry. No, she is not really my favorite.
In reality, he's got a point, though. She scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Either that or Monstro. You ready for Monstro, kids? Because you're not.
Ah.
He continues, in reality, there are far too many enjoyable villains. It's perhaps the reason that there is so much evil in the world. We grow up being entertained by bad conduct. Perhaps the best is a team. Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. Oh. They have such a lovely rapport and are so deadpan and evil at the same time.
I hear they're roommates.
Yeah, roommates. They were roommates. I don't know how well their banter survives the test of time. It doesn't. But they lit up the screen for me back when I actually enjoyed James Bond movies.
Oh, dear.
I liked the guy with the cat, too. But then, as I think more about it, Siegfried und Starke come to mind.
Yeah.
And what would life be without the droogie Alex DeLarge? Ooh. Anyone going for Hannibal Lecter? No? You guys are silent, like lambs, end quote. Oh, Dave.
Oh, I see what you did there, Dave. Oh, you wacky, wacky Dave.
You do pull our collective leg. Of lambs. Seriously. Thank you, Dave.
Show yourself out.
Charles Forsyth sent, quote, I'd like to say Darth Vader in Star Wars. In the first two movies, he means 4 and 5, he was evil and terrifying. Starting in Return of the Jedi and spanning the last few decades, the bulk of the Star Wars canon became, you know, Anakin was actually a pretty okay guy who had some bad breaks. So I'm going to go with Frank Booth in Blue Velvet. Terrifying, evil, and utterly irredeemable, end quote.
No, no, scary, bad.
I will have to take your word for it, as I've been warned I would not like Blue Velvet. I don't think you would.
Oh, God. Frank Booth terrified me when I saw him.
Well, Max was 12 at the time.
I was not. I was in my 30s. Scared the crap out of me.
Oh, is that what that smell is? Anyway,
yeah.
Byron Ho posted, quote, Scar, animated version. Oh. Three words, sexy as fuck. His voice, evilness, really? And mannerisms made him the perfect villain, end quote. Oh, Byron, I see what you did there, you naughty tiger. Thanks. Richard Tatum answered, quote, so many for so different reasons, but maybe Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, because he's hiding. Yeah, I never saw it. Did you?
No, I didn't. I figured it would freak me out. I hear Christian Bale. Yeah, he's terrific in that.
Yeah. Richard continues, because he's hiding in plain sight and not doing anything really to ever try to blend in. He just does because everyone is awful, end quote. Yeah, so thanks, Richard. Regan McStravick couldn't just pick one or two or three.
Yeah.
Quote, so many. Gary Oldman in The Professional. Alan Rickman in Quigley Down Under, also Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Sutherland in 1900. Sean Penn in One Battle After Another. Paul Giamatti in Shoot 'Em Up. So many great villains out there. And yeah, I was going to say the same thing about Vader. I felt so betrayed by that redemption. Ooh, I left out Dennis Hopper in Waterworld. Doesn't have to be a good film to have a great villain, right? End quote.
True.
Another anti-vote for Vader. Thanks, Regan. And besides... Mm. Waterworld has been a continued outdoor experience at the Universal Studios theme park, even though nobody remembers the movie it came from.
Oh, Lord. Well, you spent that much money on the attraction, you're going to keep it.
It's a really fun show. I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
It's all outside and there's jet skis and explosions. It's really cool. Brian Munda, wait for it,
waiting.
Said... quote, the ultimate evil, a sentient dark planet-sized force that acts as the overarching antagonist in...
Wait, I know Bambi meets Godzilla.
Fifth Element.
Damn, I was close.
I like it because I feel like it represents the bad side of man, kind of, which is one of the scariest things I can think of, end quote. I think he likes that movie. Thanks, Brian. Lastly, we have our hotline and Doris Hempelmeyer. I wonder if she's going to make goo-goo voices at Max.
Oh, I can only dream.
I wish she would. Let's listen.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question, which you have two different ways. Who is your favorite cinematic villain? And then on your website it says, who is your favorite cinematic criminal? Ones are kind of two different things. I'm going to go with villain. And my first one is The Wicked Witch of the West. I mean, think about it. She's green. She throws fireballs. She's got flying monkeys. What's not though? And then she gets belted. I love all that. Then I'm going to come up with another weird one because I love his comeuppance. I just think it's so clever. And that's Doyle Lonergan from The Thing. Because, you know, here's this bad guy. He's a gangster and stuff. But they get the best of him, don't they? Ooh, was that a... Spoiler alert. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I look forward to hearing the Lavender Hill Mob today. and whatever you come up with next week. And I'll see you later, Max.
Wow. Okay, so Wicked Witch and Doyle Lonigan.
Your boss is quite a card player. You all know me. You know what I do for a living. No, wait, wrong character.
I know. Well, thanks, Doris. We always love to hear your dulcet tones. Max, besides me, who's your favorite cinematic villain?
Well, of course, Bumpy, but... I don't know. I got to go with whoever it was. I think it was Regan or where is it? There's no way to choose one. There's all sorts. There's the funny villain. There's the evil villain. There's the genuinely scary ones. Hannibal Lecter is terrific. He just is. You know, Frank Booth scared me. The other one that really terrified me, I think, is one of the best in that he is just bowel-voiding scary.
Yeah.
It's one of the ones you wouldn't think, and that's Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast.
Oh, you never saw it.
As Don Logan. Oh, God, he is so damn scary. And it's friggin' Gandhi, you know?
Well, obviously it isn't.
It's Ben Kingsley. Ben Kingsley shouldn't be that terrifying, but he absolutely is.
Huh.
It's just the sheer animal rage about him. The fact that he, you don't know, you have no idea what he's going to do. You have no idea when he's going to lash out. It's utterly believable.
You mean Trevor?
Yeah, kind of. How about you?
Trevor the Mandarin, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a weird one, and the reason I'm going to pick this character is because I don't think I've ever had such a violent and palpable reaction to a character in a movie besides this one, and I don't remember actually doing this, but I was told that when I saw this film, near the end of the film, I stood up and said... Kill her, kill the bitch.
Oh,
and this would be Annie Wilkes in Misery.
Yeah. Oh, yikes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good one.
Because of what she does and how she does it and how frighteningly real it all felt. Yeah. I mean, Hannibal Lecter, sure. I mean, at the very least, Anthony Hopkins was amazing in that role. But how likely are we to meet someone like that? Not likely. I guarantee anybody who's famous for having created anything that has a fandom has either met or been afraid that they're going to meet Annie Wilkes.
So, yeah. Totally believe that.
Yeah. But all of them were great answers, and they're all happily received.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. So why not take a crack at this week's question, which is, who is your favorite cinematic rogue? We're not talking villain. We're talking scalawag, charming thief, Raffles, scruffy-looking nerf herders. Tell us.
Hey, you can't use that word. That's our word. Nerf herders.
Raffles? Oh. Who's our? Are
you a nerf herders.
The nerfs are getting out again. Would you go see to that?
Oh, damn it. Back, you stupid nerfs.
It's a foam ball. Anyway, tell us. We'll go over the comms at the end of the show. Let's get back to Now You See Me and...
The facts.
Budget, $75 million.
Ooh, boy, I believe that.
Take a guess, Max. Was it successful or not?
I'm gonna say... Let's see, so 75 million. I'm going to say 200 million.
351 million, which is why they made two more of these things.
Yeah.
The first one, I think, only came out last year, too. It's fairly recent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That first card trick we see where the dupe's card is revealed by strategic lights on the side of the building, that was a real trick. Did it work for you, Max?
It reminded me of a trick Penn and Teller did on Saturday Night Live.
Did you pick a card and was it the one that showed up?
I didn't. I didn't even try.
I did. It was the one that showed up on the building.
Was it like the Six of Diamonds? Seven of Diamonds.
I know why it worked. I won't go into that because...
Okay.
Yeah. But it was no camera trickery. They actually did the trick right there and then. So, I mean, I'm sorry. There was no camera trickery there. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Oh, that charming bridge in France where people attached padlocks representing secrets, then threw away the keys into the Seine. Yeah, they took that down because locals complained. Thanks, France.
Oh. Yeah, boy. Stupid locals.
Yeah. Honestly, I think there's a lot of cities that have that sort of thing. I'm pretty sure I saw something like that in Italy somewhere.
Yeah.
So... All those cool card moves made by Jesse Eisenberg, he must have studied months to get those right. Or are they just digitally tossed in the hands of actual magicians performing those moves over his magic?
Oh, they wouldn't do that. Come on.
I'm guessing it wasn't his real hair either.
Yeah.
Just saying. Say, strangely, that was not in the trivia, but I'll just take a wild. I'll put it out there.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah. So, our favorite question. When is New York not New York. In this case, it was that cool carousel in Central Park that was actually in New Orleans, which is interesting only because they also filmed there. But when is New Orleans not New Orleans?
When it's a backlot?
When the theater that's supposed to be there is really in Los Angeles. So there you go. Yeah. So, okay. Originally, there were to be four horsemen, but someone came to their senses and added at least one woman. Now, about people of color besides Morgan Freeman and Common. Okay, those supposed hieroglyphics showing the infamous cups and balls trick. Well, that trick does date back that far and likely was performed in Egypt. And if you look hard enough, C-3PO and R2-D2.
Hey, wait a minute.
Sometimes you do get eaten by piranha, sort of. Seems that one of the takes when Isla Fisher's character was trying to escape the water tank, she did indeed had trouble. She said, quote, "My chain got stuck. I had to really swim to the bottom. I couldn't get up. Everyone thought I was acting fabulously. I was actually drowning. No one realized I was actually struggling," end quote. Yikes. Yeah.
It's a problem with being too good, you know?
Yeah. So when she's pounding on the glass, yeah, that may or may not have been an actual thing.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Dave Franco, yes, they are related, who plays Jack, actually did cut Mark Ruffalo's face when throwing cards at him. See?
Oh, geez.
Deadly weapons.
Uh-huh. Ricky Jay was right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Ricky Jay was amazing. And that's actually why they did that. It was a tribute to Ricky Jay.
Oh,
if you don't know Ricky Jay, look him up. One of the more fascinating
people
out there. Occasionally showed up in movies, which I think was nice, but honestly, that was a waste of like the brilliance that that guy had. One of the coolest things was watching him on Mythbusters, literally throwing cards into watermelons. Like,
I saw him do that live. It was amazing. I still don't know. I don't get it.
He just knows how to do it. That's about it for trivia, which is odd as this is a semi-recent film, but that's all we have.
Surprised. So, okay, cool.
Let's get to the plot. Seems there's these four unrelated magicians. Daniel is pulling card tricks on large outdoor audiences, and they're pretty good. Merritt is an extortionist that uses hypnotism on the streets to bilk people out of money. Henley is a stage magician who has a thing for man-eating fish, and Jack, well, he's a sleight-of-hand guy that's really better at pickpocketing than anything else. Suddenly, they all find themselves invited to an apartment, most not knowing each other, relying on reputation and hearsay, as they open the mysterious door. Inside, they are shown plans for a way for them to join the even more mysterious magician's club, the Eye, not a Vagamato, which has existed throughout time.
And space.
Well, yeah. So they band together to put on a show of amazing proportions. Their first is in Vegas, where they seemingly send a randomly chosen member of the audience to his hometown bank's vault so he can witness its giant pile of cash being sucked through space into the air ducts of that theater in Vegas. The money rains down and everyone in the audience gets some take-home cash. The FBI doesn't take too kindly to this, so brings in the Four Horsemen, as they call themselves. But as arresting them would require that the FBI admits the existence of magic, they can't do that. Step in Thaddeus Bradley, ex-magician and debunker. He's willing to help the FBI because he hates these upstart magicians, and besides, it will help his fledgling YouTube channel. He shows the detective how the French heist was done. The agent feels a little out of his depth, not least of which when an agent from Interpol shows up being all French and hot and stuff. But together, they're going to bring down these consarned magicians. Next show is in New Orleans. Here, the Four Horsemen manage to rip off the account of their own backer, who's the owner of an insurance company, one that just happened to deny a lot of the claims from local folks, and those folks just happened to be in the audience. They lost their homes in Hurricane Katrina. Well, that's comeuppance. The FBI is hot on the trail, but they still can't catch the wily thieves. Last show is in New York. This time, the FBI has every exit covered. There is no way the horsemen will... Hey! Our giant safe filled with $500 million! No! Sure enough, the horsemen seem to have escaped. But how? Could it be that Thaddeus only seemed to be helping when in fact he was behind the whole thing? And what does all of this have to do with a long-dead illusionist that died in an escape attempt involving being locked into a safe that was tossed into a river? And what is this club of the Eye? Most of these questions will be answered now.
The film.
So, Max, usual question. Did you see this when it came out?
I did. I think I saw it in the theater.
Oh, cool. Do you remember your reaction at the time?
I remember thinking it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's a hopeful thing there. I did not see it when it came out. I have not seen it at all until we did this show. So I knew very little about it. Mm-hmm. But there are people in this show.
Yes, there are.
And we might want to talk about them.
Wow. Okay.
Well, let's start with Jesse Eisenberg. Nervous, twitchy Jesse Eisenberg.
This is yet another movie that he's worked in with Woody Harrelson, including, I'm thinking of the Zombieland movies.
I think that was right before this.
They work really well together. I like their dynamic.
I actually appreciate that they made him up to look sort of, kind of, but very like David Copperfield.
What? No. But he didn't look like he weighed 11 pounds.
David Copperfield, about that. Here's the thing. I think Jesse Eisenberg is kind of in that Michael Cera camp where you either like him or you don't. He was in The Social Network, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was Zuckerberg. I think he's done some really good stuff. He should have been Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor. I'm Lex Luthor and I wear sneakers. And now I'm bald. He's fine. I don't think he's a standout in this film, but he's fine.
Yeah, I think he does a decent job. We got, of course, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, wait. No. You're not skipping nobody.
I was trying to just do all the four horsemen together, but sure.
Nah.
Common
what?
Rider.
Cold?
Black RX.
I'm guessing he's a rapper or something. I don't know anything about him.
He is. He's a musician, but he's also done a bunch. He's done a bunch of movies. He's got a terrific speaking voice, and he's got real presence.
Sometimes.
That's about it.
And then sometimes they give him two lines and he runs through the film and that's about it. So
yeah, pretty much. He's there and he's fine, but he doesn't have anything to do.
We know why he's there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the other black guy.
Pretty much.
We have Mark Ruffalo, whom I only know from playing the Hulk.
Mm-hmm. He's done a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I've seen him in a few other things.
He's apparently quite the practical joker. He's well known for joking around on set and stuff. Apparently he's delightful to be around, but I don't know. All right, we have it in the theme song. Spoilers. Mm-hmm. There's going to be spoilers. We can't discuss the film without them. Mm-hmm. Most of the film, I really didn't care for his character. Not his acting, I just didn't care for his character. And the problem is, I like Mark Ruffalo generally, and I don't like to not like him.
He's really good at playing. He's very likable as a character actor. He's really good at projecting that. And in this, he's kind of a douche.
Yeah. I will come back to this, but thankfully I was not entirely let down. But
yeah.
Woody Harrelson, whom I generally don't like, I just find something that annoys him. I think he's actually just enough toned down and just enough smarm that he strikes a nice balance here. I don't think you're supposed to like him.
No, but he's charming.
Yeah, he's charismatic.
And that fits the type of magic he does, which we'll get back to.
Oh, yeah. Magic. So I'm going to Isla Fisher.
I think it's Isla. But I'm not positive.
If she's Scottish, it would make sense. But yeah.
Yeah.
I am glad she's there. I am glad that she's the illusionist. She does the big stuff. Mm-hmm. I think her trick is revolting.
the blood in the water with the piranhas.
Yeah.
was disturbing. That was kind of Chris Angel mind freak level stuff.
Yeah. It's also a kind of standard trick like Houdini. I don't think even Houdini was new when he did his water torture chamber trick.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Yeah. But I think she's fun, and I think she's got real stage presence, and I like the way she performs. She, of the four of them, is really the only... Well, that's not fair. Daniel's still a magician, but she's like the stage illusionist, and I liked that about her.
She's the large scale. She's also just cute as a button. She does a nice job.
Does she say to you, I want to play Poison Ivy at some point? I just want once.
If she were a little taller,
Yeah. Then we have Dave Franco. Yes, they're related. Playing Jack Wilder. And I kept thinking Jack Wilde, who, of course, was the kid from H.R. Puff and stuff.
Oh, God, that's right. and the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Yeah. He plays the kid. And I think he's fine. He does a perfectly decent job. Reasonable. Yeah.
He's the physical character. He's the the acrobat, cavalier, the barbarian.
Skip a bit, brother.
He does a nice job.
Yeah. We have Melanie Laurent, who is French, I guess.
So you can't fire her.
Oh, you've got a point.
Yeah, what point?
How should I know? My head hurts.
I like her. I think she's very likable in this.
Yeah, but I guess we have one major problem. Well, she's confusing, but we also have one major problem.
Mm-hmm.
How to put this nicely. The chemistry between her character and Mark Ruffalo's is, what's the word, non-existent?
Shoehorned.
Yeah.
I know we're supposed to get this, oh, look, they start out hating each other, and then, you know.
Oh, you're like, so suitable.
It's like, no, I mean, they unless she's work. Looking at him and thinking, I bet this guy will play Bruce Banner someday.
Yeah. Does all of them have to get big and green at the same time? Just anyway. She's supposed to be from Interpol. She seems confident. She seems reliable. I like the character well enough, but she and Mark Ruffalo's characters, the chemistry is just not there.
I don't buy it. I like her a lot. I do not buy their relationship.
And the next thing, I never thought I'd say this, but Morgan Freeman miscast. Why?
Really?
Because I really wanted him to be behind this. He's too smart. There's a point where they're talking about you need to be the smartest guy in the room. Mm-hmm. Morgan Freeman is the smartest guy in the room. When it turns out he's not, I can't buy it. I'm sorry.
I thought he was really good as that really smug egomaniac. He's the, what the hell was that?
Oh, he's the amazing Randy, basically.
Yeah, he's the amazing Rando. I mean, Randy. Yes. The amazing Rando. No, Randy, the guy, he's the professional debunker.
Yeah.
And I think he's really good in this sort of like, I am so much more clever than anybody.
Yeah. I like his performance, but I just don't buy him not being the top guy. I just can't do it. It's like, not Morgan Freeman. Somebody else maybe, but not him.
Morgan Freeman is one of the few people who's convincing playing God, so it's kind of hard to see him as not God.
Well, and I was convinced he was going to end up being behind everything. And I, at the very least, at the end of the movie, I just wanted to see him get out of jail. Anything. Mm. Just not have to stand it, because it just didn't. It's Morgan Freeman. No.
Morgan Freeman must run free.
And then we've got Michael Caine.
Yeah. Michael Caine's in this. Yeah. Very much Michael Caine.
It's Michael Caine.
He's playing Michael Caine.
He's fine. He's fine.
I got to say, the scenes with him and Morgan Freeman. I love watching the two of them together.
Yeah, smartest man in the room, I'm still voting for Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
But second smartest, I'd give to Michael Caine in that case. Mm-hmm. They were a lot of fun together. There wasn't enough of that.
That's right. Michael Caine as Arthur Treacher. I mean, Tressler. I'm sorry. All I could think of was, fish and chips. Yay.
I like fish and chips.
Yeah.
There's some other people. Michael Kelly, we've seen him in just about everything. He plays Agent Fuller. He's fine. And blah, 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 blah. That's the rest of them are and the rest, really. They're fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stanley Wong as MGM Grand Usher. I remember this man not at all. So whatever. Yeah.
Nope.
So as I said, the opening trick, the card trick in the outside, and I think it's New York, I can't remember, where the card lights up in the building.
Yeah.
It worked, and I'm like, hey, what a great way to get me started on this film, because I'm watching a card trick, and assuming it's not faked, it works. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I actually did pick the card. I think I know how they did it, but again, I'm not going to say. And my first note is, Jesse Eisenberg is David Copperfield.
He does. I'm kind of sorry they didn't have somebody in there trying to do Doug Henning.
Oh, boy. I actually saw Doug Henning live.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in Boston once, and I was a magician. I was a magician kid. I took magic lessons. I had a couple of gigs. I was terrible.
Oh, dear.
And I used to...
What'd you call yourself?
I don't even remember. I hope I didn't call myself anything, except I really don't want to perform. I just want to actually play with my magic toys.
The Great Lusoni?
I don't remember. I didn't have a name. I had a trunk full of stuff. I would buy I would buy magical equipment. And it was fun, and it was expensive. Magic tricks are expensive because, the secret. And I actually did a class, and I had to perform it. And this was actually the first time I ever improvised ever. I was 13. And the week before the performance, everyone in the class did their trick. So this is what's going to happen. Everyone's going to go on and everybody did their trick and everything's fine. Mm-hmm. The day of the show, unbeknownst to everybody, the girl who went on before me switched her trick and did mine.
Oh.
And I am left like, what am I supposed to do? And the teachers in the back are like, Can you do the unexploding balloon trick? And I'm like, yeah, I can do something. And I came out and I had to do the thing where you blow up a balloon and stick a pin in it, and it doesn't. And I had to make up the story and everything on the spot. Wow. And then I popped the balloon and the trick was over. My parents later said that, oh, you know, you had real good stage presence. And I said, I was panicking. I had to do all of that from nothing.
Wow. So,
yeah.
What a jerk that
she was. She did. And there's a little get, it's this thing called the square circle where you show the square is empty and the circle is empty. And now I pull stuff out and you pull out handkerchiefs and one of them is attached to a sock. And you're like, what? And then you look at your own legs and realize there's a sock missing in this sort of little gag. She even did that. And I was just like, wow,
man,
you are horrible.
Stealing other magicians' tricks. They used to kill people for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're 13. What do you, and of course, all of you are nerds because only nerds do magic when they're a kid. I'm sorry. It's true. Yeah. Anyway, that's a little off to the side. So we get to see all of the magicians do their bits. We see J. Daniel. Just go by Daniel. Nobody cares. Yeah. And he does his trick, which I fell for. We get to see Henley's trick, or is it Headley? Or
it's Headley, yeah.
And I was just like, "That's a little gross." I don't know if I cared for the piranha fish, but it fit her character. She was doing, you know, the
hip for trick. Shock value,
yeah. So you know, I guess giving it a little twist was nice. But I know you wanted to come back to Merritt McKinney and his hypnotism.
Now, I gotta say, he has two shticks. One is supposed mind reading.
Right.
Which, quite honestly, I was okay with, because there are guys who can do that. They can read really, really subtle body cues, body language, voice tremors, eye movements, and they can appear to read your mind. It's really disturbing, but it's hypnotism. That is not how hypnotism friggin' works.
I think first, you can literally just go up and touch somebody and they're hypnotized. I think that's how it works.
He just literally walks up, goes, sleep!
In heavenly peace!
In heavenly peace! Yeah. No! I'm sorry. Yeah. No, that is not how it works. And also, you cannot hypnotize someone who doesn't want to be hypnotized.
Yeah.
That's what I learned about hypnosis. My parents taught me self-hypnosis to get rid of headaches, to relax muscle groups. I actually took a couple of classes with a guy.
Oh, neat.
And he said, the first thing is you cannot, the stuff they do in the movies where they look across the room at the guy and go, now you're in my power, is crap. It's
utter
crap.
Wait a minute. Wait. You studied hypnotism.
Yeah.
Now I know I'm doing this stupid show 379 episodes later. Huh? Anyway. I'm sorry, Matt, what were you saying?
Nothing.
Sure, you can hypnotize over Zoom.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I guess you, technically, I guess you
technically, you can. It's just they just have to hear your voice. There are some people who can do stuff with their eyes. But you can't make someone who's like, hi, I'm driving an armored truck, sleep. Okay. Like, no.
Yeah. So his opening bit is basically to extort money out of a guy that he figures out is cheating on his wife, who is hypnotized next to him. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that introduction to the character of Merritt McKinney?
Much as I disliked the magic of the hypnotism, I thought it was a really good way to tell us, this guy is kind of a jackass.
Yeah.
I mean, he's charming, but he's slimy, and he... Yeah. is not overly encumbered by morals.
And it's Woody Harrelson, so it's not a huge stretch for him.
Woody Harrelson's very good at playing slightly, I don't know, greasy people.
Yeah. I gotta say, though, it makes me wonder about choosing him for this club. Because we're gonna come back to the eye, because I do want to come back to that. But these are meant to give you an impression of not only the skills of our main characters, but also their personalities. We get to Jack... And Jack is performing, I think he's performing a card trick on the Staten Island Ferry or something
like that. That's what it looks like, yeah.
And he gets caught, because he says, I'll give $100 to anybody who proves, and somebody catches him with a card up his sleeve.
No, it's not a card, he's doing Uri Geller's
spoon bending. That's right. I will give him credit, he's doing it out in public, like out in the open, as opposed to on TV or something.
Yeah.
And he gets caught. There's a spoon up his sleeve, which is honestly how you generally do that trick. But, and then he rips the guy off and takes off. And he's young and fast and nimble and, you know, that's fine.
Sprightly.
He's, as far as magicians go, he's not really much of a standout. because
no, he's more of I guess we're supposed to think of him as, oh, this is the close-up magic guy.
Yeah,
but he's a pickpocket. He's a sleight of hand guy.
Yeah, and I gotta say, if you've ever been lucky enough to see sleight of hand literally sitting next to the person doing it, mm-hmm. and they're good, even if you know what they're doing, you can't see what they're doing.
It's kind of scary. Because it's like, I am looking at your hands. I know what you're going to do, and I didn't see you do it.
Like, I know how the cups and balls works, generally. Uh-huh. I couldn't do it because it's way too dexterous for me. But when Penn and Teller did it with clear plastic cups, I was like, that's not fair. I know what you're doing. Dang. I can see through the cups, and I still can't tell where you're going. I mean,
Yeah. He's cool to watch. There is a fight scene between him and Mark Ruffalo.
Right.
Where he uses basically magic foo.
Yeah.
Which, now I have to say, it looks really cool. This is a really fun sequence. He's using flash paper to throw little fireballs. He's whipping cards Ricky Jay style.
When he did that, were you thinking, fireball?
Yes, that is exactly what I was thinking. That and a fireball, Herc, a fireball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And flash paper does work like that. And the nice thing about flash paper is you can basically hold it and light it.
Yeah,
and
it burns at a very low temperature, so it's not dangerous.
But it also burns really fast. That's why it doesn't burn you, is because it burns so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked that. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was something we hadn't seen before. And, you know, technically the nerd beating the jock in a fight with magic. I mean, what nerd heart hasn't wanted to see that?
Absolutely. That just warms the cockles of my little nerd heart.
Yeah. So, you know, we get an interesting and fun, and I want to say pretty fast moving introduction to our four horsemen. Although, mm-hmm. I need you to help me with something.
Yeah.
They have this symbol that pops up at their first show.
Yeah.
It's got a line mm-hmm. with three rectangles in it.
Yeah.
Why
aren't
there
four? This isn't the Eye of Horus.
No. This is their symbol, the four horesmen symbol. Why aren't there four boxes?
There are five boxes.
Are there?
Yeah. There's three pointing in one direction, one pointing down, and one sort of off to the side.
I only remember there being three, and I'm like, where's the fourth one?
No, they have at least four. I saw five.
Which, of course, would make sense. I just didn't.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we see them do their opening thing. You can argue as to whether the hypnotism as depicted is believable or not. Mm-hmm. But then they all get these little tarot cards that say, you need to go to this apartment and find out about the eye, and they go.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, what we find is this James Bond hologram schematic in the apartment.
I gotta give him this. It didn't just project into the air and show three-dimensional pictures. He fills the place with dry ice vapor, which is the only way it would work.
Except it wasn't very thick dry ice vapor, because if it had been, you couldn't see them. And I don't know. I saw the little 3D schematic thing, and I was like, it's like, if you're going to do this, CG, we're not done with you, because when we get to Vegas, there's this part where they have a flying, swirling magic cape all by itself.
And
that is so CG.
That is so not there.
Well, and the problem is it kind of really takes away from the idea that these people might be doing something in the moment with their mm-hmm. skill. If you're going to bring CG into it, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
I will say, though, the first show they're doing in Vegas, their big Four Horsemen show, where they pick somebody from the audience, and it turns out he's French, and they're like, hey, we're going to pick somebody randomly, and we want you to all to think of your hometown bank, and then write it on a piece of paper and tell us what it is. And he brings them, my hometown bank is the Banque de France,
The Bank of Cheese.
Otherwise known as the Bank of, we just leave the money lying out on a pallet. Because
we're French.
Because it's literally a wooden pallet heaped with piles of euro.
In the middle of the vault.
And I was like, okay.
The least convenient way to deal with any kind of currency.
Right. So they're like, here, put on Cerebro and
Magneto.
Cerebro. And we're going to teleport you to your bank vault in France. Mm-hmm. And so he puts on his little helmet, and they put him in this thing, and alakabam and alakazoom, and he gets squished into nothingness, and they show a video where he is in France. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we just need you to stand there and watch. And as we watch, all of the money quickly burns away, obviously flash paper. Or actually, I take it back. It gets sucked into the bank vault.
The intake vault, yes, because, of course, all bank vaults are equipped with basically wind tunnels for ventilation.
To be fair, vaults are required to have air. They are not required to have one you could walk through.
They are not required to have one that can suck the money into it.
Well, and where does it suck it to? It sucks it to Vegas.
Yeah, well, sort of.
I have to admit, though, watching the trick, I'm like, okay, obviously this can't be done the way you couldn't do this in an actual Las Vegas show. They're using blah, 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 blah. But then Morgan Freeman, like an angel from above, comes down and basically with his little prestige explanation goes, you could do it and you could do it like this and it would work. And then they show us, oh, when the French guy disappeared, he didn't go to France. He went to this fake trap door.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm sitting there going, you know what? Yes, it would take ridiculous amounts of planning ahead of time.
But you could do
But you could do this.
Yeah, the whole thing with the French guy wasn't randomly chosen. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense because if you think when a magician says pick a card, any card, and you're actually picking a random card, you are kidding yourself.
Well, it depends.
It's called forcing.
Sometimes it's a force, and sometimes they have a way of knowing where your card goes back into the deck, and that's how.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but the main thing is, if a magician wants you to choose a particular card, you're going to choose it. I don't know how, but they do it.
The Seven of Diamonds I did choose. I was like, okay, I'll play along, and I chose it, and I was like, oh. And again, I know a little bit. I don't. It was a long time ago, but I think I know.
Not asking you to give any secrets away.
No. And it's very simple. If I'm right, it's very simple, and it'd be one of those things where people would go, "Oh, really? That's it?" And it's like, yeah. But
the tricks are very impressive. Although I have to admit, a lot of the time I'm going, "How much did this cost to set up?"
Yeah. Well,
we're going to come back to the eye. by a very rich guy, by Michael Caine and his short sentences.
Michael Caine, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Caine.
Well, yeah, we'll come back to that. I will say, though, that directorially, they're doing something in this film that I absolutely hate.
What is that?
The orbiting camera.
Oh, yes, the one where you start to get motion sickness.
I cannot stand it when they decide that the camera has to be constantly moving, especially if it's going to be moving around somebody. I don't get it. It's annoying. It doesn't help. All it does is piss me the hell off. It doesn't help. Like, it's not exempt. It's not underlining anything. All it does is just the camera's moving. I hate it.
I can't say I feel that strongly about it. I don't really like it, but yeah, it really seems to bug you.
Yeah. So they bring in the four horsemen and they're going to question them. They have them all handcuffed. Of course, all of us are thinking, well, that's pointless, which it is. But I got to say, that's the most stylish FBI headquarters I've ever seen.
Very elegant. My God.
Everything's
so clean and everything's like shiny and very nice.
But in the middle of this, suddenly I just wanted a Diet Pepsi. I don't know why. Did you?
Oh, man, that happened to me. It must have been magic.
It wasn't quite Godzilla 85 levels of product placement, but it was close. The camera zooms in. Somebody's hand reaches for the sweaty can of Diet Pepsi. The really annoying thing was, at that moment, I was already drinking a Diet Pepsi.
You owe us money. Lots of money.
There was a good line in this that I wrote down, and it's Mark Ruffalo talking to... Oh, no, I think it's actually Michael Caine talking to Morgan Freeman, and he says, really, can you be any more of a condescending ass? And Morgan Freeman replies, yes.
Yeah. It's like, those lines would not have worked, I think, with any two other actors.
No.
Not in this movie, anyway. It really just loved the way they played off each other. I wish they'd had more scenes together.
Yeah. I would have paid. Maybe they do in the other ones. I haven't seen the other ones, so.
There are some very cute bits that impressed me. The Four Horsemen are on the plane with Arthur Treacher, and they get him to give the answers to some of the most common password security questions.
Yeah.
They get to find out what his mother's maiden name was. They find out what the name of his first pet was.
And they do it in a really cool way. It's basically Woody Harrelson trying his shtick, but specifically failing
at it. They all try it. You know, Jesse Eisenberg starts it off, and then Harrelson gets in, and they're all like, wow, you're really hard to read. It's very sharp. I like that. And by the way, that is what things hackers do, socially engineering people to get them to give up that kind of information.
And I got to say, a lot of the tricks magicians do have not changed, in some cases, in thousands and thousands of years. It's all about how you do it. Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller, a lot of their shtick is nothing new.
Yeah.
But the way they do their tricks is so entertaining and so enrapturing. Yep. It so pulls you in. That's the part that matters.
Yeah.
And when they specifically screw up their skills, I didn't catch it. Mm-hmm. At the moment, do you remember if you caught it the first time you saw, when they're on the plane, did you catch, oh, they must be doing this on purpose? No, I was just like, wow, nope. I guess
you're just... I figured they were, I thought it was just banter. I thought it was like, oh, okay, that's like, you know, just getting to know each other, trying to give us some character development.
Yeah. Then we have the Mardi Gras show, which there's one bit of the hypnotism that may have been possible that I did like, because we see him set it up. He gets a bunch of people. He basically says, you're under hypnosis. You're all part of a rugby team. When you hear the word freeze, that's the person that says the word. You're going to go after them because you're going to have to take them down. It's the team, opposing team's captain. Okay, fine. And then they go. He sends them back to the audience, and we forget about it. At least I forgot about it because I didn't know what they was going to do. But it's set up because they know that Mark Ruffalo's character is going to come after him, and somebody on Mark Ruffalo's team is going to yell freeze, and out of the audience.
That's how it slows him down, yep.
Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty cool. I liked that part.
That was a nice touch. I don't believe it would have worked, but sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, just also to say,
for Mardi Gras, it's pretty sedate and quiet.
Yeah. No one was throwing up on anyone. No one was throwing beads. I didn't see any yummies. Nope, nobody was flashing anybody. It was a very polite Mardi Gras.
Yeah, very quiet.
I got to ask, what did you think of the whole Eye of Horus thing?
All right, so we're going to get to the eye?
Yes.
I don't know, because we don't know anything about it.
Nothing. It comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it is never explained. It's basically, we find out that, according to legend, by the way, this is not true.
No.
That there was a secret order of magicians called the Eye of Horus, who used stage magic to protect real magic and to fight for truth and justice and spangled leotards for all mankind. And that the one thing I do kind of like about that is how it works for the motivation of the characters. It's very hard to tell what the trick is in this movie. What are they trying to accomplish? Because they're not stealing the money to keep it. They keep giving it away or leaving it behind.
Right.
And you realize the whole thing is an audition.
Right.
They are all trying to do something so impressive that they will get inducted into this secret society because reasons.
Oh, and stuff.
And stuff, yeah. I mean, part of it has got to be sort of magician's ego. The Eye of Horus was supposed to be the best.
Yeah.
This would mean they are. But we don't know.
No.
I'm having to make that stuff up. Now, it's a cute little touch. The Eye of Horus that they talk about is kind of a variant of something in Egyptian mythology called the Four Sons of Horus. And there are the Four Horsemen.
Bingo, Bango, Bongo, and Irving.
Exactly. The great, the famous Egyptian gods, Bingo, Bango, Bongo, and Irving. One of whom is the god of drummers, as far as I know.
Sure.
That was cute. A lot of this is very surface. It's the same, and this is just a personal pet peeve. I used to be very into the tarot. I used to do tarot readings. I still own about a half a dozen decks. They use the most superficial meaning of the cards.
Right.
You know, the hermit. Oh, it's because you were betrayed and you're left alone. That's not what the hermit means.
Isn't the hermit a source of wisdom?
Yeah, it's contemplation. It's the spiritual gut journey. It's not about being alone because that's what a hermit is. The original meaning of the hermit, the religious figure, it's also death doesn't mean friggin' death. It means change and transformation.
Isn't the one you don't want the tower?
The tower and the devil are the really bad ones. And neither of those show up in this. I get it. You don't have to explain it to people that way, but it's cheesy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It just is. The tarot is an incredibly rich text, and they just toss it around like candy. That bothers me.
Well, and I'm getting a little ahead, but I found that one of the reasons that the ending was ultimately unfulfilling is that we never learn anything about the eye and what it means, who else is in it, what do they do? Do they have a clubhouse?
Is the magic real?
Where's the honeycomb hideout?
Yeah! And what about Scarecrow's brain?
And Ruffalo and Frenchie have no real chemistry, so the ending is kind of,
unconvincing. But
there's also a big car chase, and I'm watching
because
the car chase
going...
Because
you have a heist movie, and you have to have a car chase in a heist movie.
Which
that's
is fine,
the law.
Except Jack keeps getting away, and there's like plenty of distance between him and Mark Ruffalo, and then suddenly they're right on his tail again. And it's like, I will say though, when Jack dies, none of us think that when Jack died, everybody cried. No. I didn't buy it. Did you?
No, because for one thing, you can't see him. Anytime you can't see the face, you don't. You know they're still alive.
Although we're pretty close, we see a profile and it's crackly. I will say though, I really liked the explanation as to why Jack didn't actually die.
Yeah, the trick of the switched cars is clever.
Well, and of course, then later it also relies on one extra piece, which I think we'll probably get to when we get to the ending part, which is very soon. Usually, you don't want to give away secrets, but I liked the way they explained it because it's like, you know what? I can see that and I'd buy it. I would have fallen for it too.
So. My one problem with it is that was an insanely reckless and dangerous thing to do. They cause a car crash and an explosion on the 59th Street Bridge. They could have killed people.
Well, we don't know they didn't.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, and the horsemen, the horsemen themselves, I think, were sitting there going, there's plausible deniability up to the point that Jack actually starts attacking FBI agents. And I'm like, well, you can't get out of that. Well, you know what else we can't get out of is we can't get out of coming to the end where we make up our minds about this film because we're running out of time here. So let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
The finish.
To Max.
Ha! Oh, damn it.
There's literally nothing up his sleeve. Nothing. All the way up to his neck. Anyway, Max, you saw it when it came out. Have you seen it since then?
No, I don't think I have. This is the first time I've seen it in years.
And you said something about you thought it was fun.
I thought it was fun, but I find the ending very unsatisfying, and I find the whole thing very superficial. It's cool to look at, but I'm left wondering... You couldn't have done something more with this?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, yeah, it is fun, and the pacing is terrific. It moves along great.
Yeah.
I'm never bored. It's one of those movies, the old test is, do you look at your watch?
Mm.
Or how far into the movie do you look at your watch? And I didn't do it for over an hour, and that's really unusual.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. I think the performers are having fun. I think this story doesn't hold up. Mm. I think if you push it at all, it collapses. But it's fun, and I don't think it's supposed to be anything else. The whole thing with the overarching thing of Leonard Shrike, the magician who died during a trick and was disgraced by Morgan Freeman's character, that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, he was my father, eh? Turn to the dark side, you knob.
You knob.
Yeah, again, I thought, that's really cool, but it's really superficial.
Yeah. Before we get to me, I forgot that we have series questions that we need to answer.
Oops, yes.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, was the loot worth all the effort?
To them, yes, because ultimately, the loot was the friends they made along the... No, sorry. The loot was joining the Eye of Horus.
Well, also the loot is giving back money to people that were in some ways robbed. You know,
that were hurt, were harmed by the people who also harmed Leonard Shrike, as it turns out.
Now, this is going to be a multiple. Were the plans believable?
I don't know. They were believable if you see it as a show. If you see it as they were just trying to do something as complicated and ridiculous as possible to show off. As an actual heist, not really, no.
No, the hypnotism is the weak point. That and the mirror wall. I'm like, the mirror wall's great as long as you don't get too close to it. And then suddenly it's
they
like,
were standing hey, look right to next to it. It's like, hey, why am I there?
So, I appreciate, though, that they explained how they did stuff. And it's like, okay, that would make sense. I could see how this would work. But it relies on a couple of points. They're like, that doesn't, no. So, no.
It's not so great,
Does the security as depicted make sense?
Honestly, no, not really. The
the piles of cash.
Piles of cash sitting around. The guys are, we're driving this safe full of $500 million because we got a phone call from you that said, do it.
Yeah.
They could have, you know how they could have fixed that? They said, you gave the appropriate passphrase.
Yeah.
But it's like, really? A phone call? Really?
Well, also, there's this giant safe. Yeah. And I'm looking around and I don't see no forklift. So it's like, how
they
the hell
were the two guys? The how did they get it in that truck?
Yeah. Are the guards or cops underpowered? Well, that's a weird question for this film, because in one way, no, not at all. No, not underpowered.
They've got tremendous resources.
Well, and one of them, here's the spoiler, we warned you, one of them is in on it.
Yeah. Yeah, one of them is the fifth horseman.
Yeah. So, yes and no.
Yeah, I think that was all right. I mean, the whole thing is they make the FBI look like idiots, but they're trying to, and they got someone on the inside to help.
Yeah. And lastly, do we find ourselves rooting for the thieves? Yes.
Honestly, yeah, of course we do. They're just so charming. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Now, what about you? You saw this when it came out. Have you seen it since?
I have not seen it.
You didn't see it?
Nope.
You've never seen it? This is your first time?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What'd you think?
I mean, let's face it. There's not a lot of depth here. We don't know what the eye is, their whole goal. If you don't know the goal of a movie or the characters, it's really hard to care that much. But you know what? It was fun. I enjoyed it. I was glad I watched it. If this had been, I guess it was probably a summer tentpole film, oh, you're supposed to see it and you're supposed to like it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I wish there had been a bit more diversity in the casting. That'd have been nice. I mean, we have one woman and one black guy who actually gets to talk. And of course, it's Morgan Freeman. It's, magic, which I kind of like. I like the idea of somebody with that kind of skill being able to find a real world use for it and being able to do something cool with it. And I don't mean Bill Bixby. so, it is flawed. It is very heavily flawed, but I still enjoyed it. And I have a question, one other question I want to add onto this too for you. Seeing this, especially seeing it again, does it make you want to see the sequel?
Kind of does.
Yeah,
maybe they explain what the Eye of Horus is.
I'm just thinking, if you can do something more, fun like this and same characters, but something else fun. Sure. How you're going to explain that they're not picked up by the FBI, I'll be interested to see that, but whatever.
Well, they probably move out of the country or something. I got one other problem in terms of one of the big things is they take $500 million and they frame Morgan Freeman.
Right.
I'm sorry, Thaddeus, by leaving it in his car. Who would that convince? The car. It's like, yes, I stole $500 million. I packed it in my own car so tightly that there is no way I could have gotten into the car to drive it away.
Well, to be fair, who's the arresting officer? It's Mark Ruffalo, so you don't have to convince him because he was in on it. So, it's very flawed. I mean, this isn't... Yeah. Hudson Hawk levels of flawed, but it's own brand of flawed. I still enjoyed it.
It is
if you want to see a better magic movie, go see The Prestige.
Yeah, yeah.
Or The Illusionist. Either one. I liked both of them, although I think The Prestige is probably better. Also, to be fair, has one of the same themes, which is basically sometimes the trick is you literally couldn't conceive of the amount of preparation that somebody is willing to go through to create an illusion.
Yeah.
Which is this. Mm-hmm. But you also might be surprised at how much effort we take in putting together this show and our poll question.
Aha! Nicely done there.
It was not.
But by the way, and I have to ask you, Mike, is this your card?
You're not holding anything, Max.
I know. It's magic. Thank you.
He will not be here all week.
Damn it.
But anyway, our poll question is... Who is your favorite cinematic rogue? A Han Solo type, or what's his name from Tangled?
Flynn Rider,
there you go. Who's your favorite rogue character? And let us know. How can you let us know? You may well ask.
How can we, the knowing, let... Damn it!
Hopefully you ask it better than that, but we'll assume you did. You could email us directly like Bill O'Lading. That's us at MaxMikeMovies.com. We love getting your letters. Let us know about the answer to the poll question. Give us ideas for shows or series or movies that... we've sometimes added movies to series because you guys have brought them up and we didn't know about them.
Yeah.
You can also go to our website, MaxMikeMovies.com. All of the episodes are there. Use that search function. Maybe a film that you like or just recently saw has been on our show and you want to find out, type it in. There you go.
Could be.
You can find us on social media, as long as that social media is Facebook or Blueski. We're both places as Max Mike Movies. We are on every podcast app known to man as Max Mike Movies. And last but not least, you too could be like Doris Hempelmeyer and call us, leaving a message on our hotline. That number is 617-398-7266. One more time, 617-398-7266. But
operators are non-existent.
Exactly. We are just starting this series. We've had two films so far. Max, what is going to be film number three in This Is a Good Place for a Stick-Up?
You know, I've been going back and forth between a couple of them, but I think I'm going to pick one I have never seen.
Oh.
And it sounds like the cast is really impressive, and it just sounds like it's a quintessential heist movie, and that is Score.
I think it's The Score.
The Score.
Yeah.
No, I prefer Score, like goal.
No. Or something you shouldn't yell right after sex.
Oh. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Ooh, you shouldn't yell goal either. That would explain a lot.
It would, wouldn't it, Max? So next week, why don't you score with our show on The Score?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, wow. I got to write a lot of apology letters.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.